This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Our Culture Gaming. I'm Scott, joined by Josh.
Hello, Scott.
Josh, my friend, the Borderlands movie continues to not make any goddamn sense, but there's quite a lot of stuff to get through. Now, we have an additional casting came last night that Mr. Jack Black is going to be Claptrap, which I love. I immediately tweeted thinking that that's God tier, mainly because I love the Kung Fu Panda movies. And dude being Claptrap. I'm just saying the Kung Fu Panda trilogy is one of the best trilogies of all time. Just going to put it out there. Yeah. But also, we just thought we'd break a lot of this stuff down with this movie because if you go through the casting so far, you've got Jack Black as Claptrap. Cate Blanchett is going to be Lilith. Which I guess I can kind of see in terms of just sort of being this like magic channeling. If they go down the Fire Hawk route, she can get her wings out. She can be this sort of badass on screen thing.
Yeah.
Kevin Hart's going to be Roland. So I guess there's like an energetic sort of presence coming from Kevin Hart to be that character. Maybe inject a bit more comedy to him, I guess. Jamie Lee Curtis is Pandoran archaeologist Patricia Tanis, who I forgot who that was. I'm not a massive Borderlands fan anyway, but I had a bit of a Google. And Patricia Tanis is the person that is sort of slightly goes mad or has gone fully mad and leaves you a bunch of audio logs that you can read about. She's investigating these this ancient alien race, the Iridians, I think they're called. And it seems like that might be what they're going for because, according to a write-up from Forbes from last year, the movie is going to be, you know, it's set in the distant future. You've got these vault hunters going after a vault on Pandora, and the thing that's inside there is ancient alien technology. So they might be doing the whole Iridian thing. And then, yeah, it's just as a culmination of the cast and the fact that it's directed by Eli Roth, and it's written by Craig Mazin, Mr. Chernobyl's own Craig Mazin.
I still don't believe this is true, right? Because you told me this, Scott, just before we started filming. This was a part of the process that I just hadn't heard of. I didn't realise he was
me
on
either.
Script writing duties. And I just can't believe that's not a bit. I can't believe that's not you pulling my leg and having me on, because how is the Chernobyl man making the Borderlands movie? Like, he's already making The Last of Us HBO TV show, of course, but like, is he now just the, did he make Chernobyl so that he could live out his dream of adapting his favorite video game properties? I don't know, but that's the only explanation I have for this.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, yeah, like, he just sort of, I mean, the write-up that I read, I think it was on Eurogamer, said that he's doing the movie based off, like, Eli Roth is directing the movie based off a script by Craig Mazin. So whether he's actively involved going forward, whether there's, you know, maybe the script is going to be changed going forward, but the guts of it apparently are whatever Craig Mazin initially laid down, and they had their first draft completed in 2020. So I guess, like, I don't know, how do you see this coming together? Because for me, Borderlands isn't something that is story-heavy. There's obviously lore there, there's terminology there, there's the Atlas Corporation fighting the vault hunters and they're going after all the loot and whatever, but like that in a way, you know, that could be like a sort of super fun National Treasure Jumanji energy style movie where it's just an excuse to have fun with some cool actors and everything. And I thought the Jumanji movies were like surprisingly solid, like for as much as they shouldn't have worked, like they're totally fine. At least I've only seen the first one, but they reviewed well enough. Do you think that's the kind of tone that they're going for, or are they getting these actors and Mr. Mazin to try and do something else with the characters?
Well, I would have said that's the tone they're going for, just based on the fact that, you know, obviously Jack Black's in there, he was in, you know, Jumanji and stuff. And I think Jumanji is a good touchstone because that took like a broad video game plot of get the MacGuffin or whatever, you know, yeah, had, even had lives in that movie, you know, it was very video gamified. And I think like the plot of Borderlands 1 in particular, like I've played that game so many times. And I even before doing this news, I had to do a quick catch up on all of the big plot points because it's just something that kind of washed over me. But the basic premise of like these four vault hunters, you know, searching for the vault, this thing that only happens once every 200 years, like that's a pretty solid basis for a movie, especially when you get all of these characters together, all of these cool actors, and allow them to bounce off each other. But it's the inclusion of Eli Roth and Craig Mazin at this point that makes me wonder what tone they're going for. Obviously, Eli Roth has made like one or two family-friendly movies in the past. He just recently did the, I think it's The House with the Clock in Its Walls, also starred Jack Black. Like that skewed younger, but before then, he's known primarily for things like Hostel and Cabin Fever and horror movies like that. So maybe he's kind of trying to bring that kind of edge to it. Like, it's just a mad project. Every single time I hear about a new casting choice, I wonder how they ended up with that person or how that person was convinced to sign on. Because, like, these are big name stars, you know what I mean? And they're playing, like, these characters in a video game adaptation that, even though Borderlands is big, I don't think it's on the same level of like a Last of Us or an Uncharted in terms of the popular consciousness. Not saying it's worse than those games or saying I'm trying to put it down or anything, but it's, you know, it's not in households the same way. Like I
know what you
say,
mean.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I don't know. Like for me, like I would say like, the Borderlands IP is like a known thing. Like the hype around Borderlands 3 beforehand, like we were talking about that for years. Like when the hell is Borderlands 3 going to come out? And they were doing all the pre-sequel stuff. And I do feel like the Borderlands IP is like just as known as Last of Us, I would say, in terms of just like, have you heard of this kind of thing? So I think if I did the mum test and just sort of rang my mum and said, have you heard of The Last of Us? And I'm like, have you heard of Borderlands? Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't know. I think if I did the mum test, they might both be up there. But I'm going to throw a potential curveball here because when I think of The Last of Us HBO TV series, and me and you and Ben Roy, I think, did a whole podcast on this, I don't need that because for me, the video game is like perfect. You've got brilliant casting, cinematography, pacing, narrative punch, everything. What can a TV series bring to the table that the game hasn't already nailed? In Borderlands' case, a lot of people love Tales from the Borderlands because it fleshed out the narrative side of it and the lore side of it. And I guess that could be something that maybe carries across into the movie. And so in a way, I'm more up for a Borderlands movie out of sheer curiosity, because how do you take a franchise that is so gameplay focused and then flesh it out into an hour and a half, 2 hour movie? So for me, in a really stupid way, I'm more interested in a Borderlands movie, even though I care less about the Borderlands games and I love The Last of Us. I'm just a walking contradiction, mate.
No, I know what you mean, because I mean, when we were talking about The Last of Us HBO show yesterday and the news we did, you know, we were talking about how, you know, it's going to try to thread a particularly difficult needle, because you can't get too close to the source material because it's so cinematic to begin with, and those performances are so iconic, and the camera work, the script, the editing, everything is so filmic in general that, you know, it's going to be hard to create an adaptation that kind of justifies its own existence and a jump to a different medium. But like you say, Borderlands is so gameplay driven. You get a lot of the story just by characters calling you. You know, like in the second game, Handsome Jack shows up a lot, but so much of his character is fleshed out by him just, you know, ringing you up and giving you grief, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's like going to be interesting to see. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt that kind of very specifically gaming style of storytelling into a, you know, a feature-length movie, presumably an entire franchise. I imagine that's what they're eyeing up going forward.
We should touch on that because, yeah, we've got, you know, great casting so far. I think it's worth, because we were going to maybe go down like certain casting choices. I think reading what I've, because I don't remember Patricia Tannis at all. I had to run that by Jules and be like, who the hell is this person? And then reading up that, oh yeah, she's the person who was like searching for loot for so long. She went slightly insane or like full on insane over time, you know, in the whole time with the aliens and everything. But speaking of Handsome Jack, and you can touch on any other casting if you want, but like the Handsome Jack stuff, do you think that they will bring him in? He'll be the main antagonist, or is he something that you tease towards the end and that's how you get your sequel?
Well, because I'm incredibly selfish and I'm not entirely sure this will get a sequel, I want him to bring him in earlier because he's such a great character, and I want to know about what everyone thinks. I want to know down in the comments what everyone thinks about like who should play him and stuff, because I feel like there's so much potential for him to become like this great character played by like a great actor or whatever. But I mean, it makes sense for them to maybe make this first movie a little bit self-contained, you know, just introduce the Vault Hunters, introduce the idea of vaults, the world. Because, I mean, there's a lot of world building to be done. Like, it's a hard sell to just be like, we're on this planet Pandora. There's these things called vaults. There's an ancient alien race who set them all up. We're in this kind of weird Mad Max style thing. And then maybe end on a tease of Handsome Jack into a, you know, a a different sequel.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He, like, obviously, I'm not going to... Is it a kind of his spoilers? Because it's like, well, this could happen in the movie, but Handsome Jack kills main characters, or at least characters who are now main characters in the potential movie. That's a potential thing. And for me, I was like, well, that could be a great way to introduce that character. You have someone at the very end, maybe even post-credits or whatever, come in, kill whatever main character, and then you reveal whoever you've cast as Handsome Jack there in the movie, like Matt Damon in Interstellar style. So I guess... to that end, like, who would you cast as Handsome Jack? Did you have someone nailed down? Because I've got a hell of a pick, mate.
See,
I've
you do, and I don't even want to, like, you know, hypothesize or, you know, pontificate on who could play him, because I feel like you've got a pretty spot on shout, and it's not the shout that I expected. But when you sent me this, I thought, you know what, I can see that.
I'm just throwing it out there that I think James Van Der Beek should be Handsome Jack. And the only reason is because I watched him do a rap battle with Randall Park the other day. And he was just great. And obviously Randall Park flattened him, but like he was there. And I just think he's got great presence. I like the idea of this like sort of formally like kind of half comedy, half drama guy coming back, embodying the Handsome Jack energy, kind of being, he can completely be this sort of snarling kind of villain who's a bit suave, a bit stylish. I did see though, because I tweeted that out, someone replied saying that it should be Anthony Starr, which is the dude that plays Homelander in The Boys. And that is a hell
That's
of a casting.
Good.
Like that would make it so much darker. But at the same time, you know, he could, I keep leaning on the Craig Mazin side of it and being like, oh, is there going to be more dramatic heft to this than what we think? But that's only because I only know him from Chernobyl. But obviously he's about to go into The Last of Us, which felt like more of a direct thematic continuation or whatever of what, like the dourness of Chernobyl carries into Last of Us. But like Borderlands would have to be something completely different.
Well, I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Borderlands 2 especially, whilst it felt a lot more character-driven, it also did have those big emotional moments. Again, not to spoil anything from the games, because it might then spoil something from the movies, but like you said, you know, there are deaths, there are big confrontations between, you know, the likes of Lilith and Handsome Jack and stuff like that. There is emotional storytelling to mine there, which is kind of why my mind immediately goes to that second movie, because that second game, because I just associate that game with me being a bit more complicated and having a bit more depth in terms of its storytelling. But then the first game is kind of a bit more cut and dry and easier to set up, I think, for a first entry in a franchise.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like they could play it super simple. That's why it's so weird to talk about, because it's like Borderlands, like if you're going to do a really basic version of that movie, then it's a quite a light and fluffy action adventure style movie with a really simple plot, Jumanji style, and you just kind of have fun with those actors. But why cast this caliber of actor? Not that they're all like top tier, oh my God, Oscar winners, but they're still, they've got great range. And personally, out of all of them, my favorite is obviously Jack Black as Claptrap. And I think like he's the nearest analog to what his character is in my head. Where I'm just like, I can totally just see that voice coming out of Claptrap and it just totally works. But I don't know if you have any like favorites or anything.
Well, it's funny because like I love Jack Black. Like I'm a big Jack Black fan. I'll watch him in anything. I even saw him in, you know, Jumanji, which I wouldn't have cared about, you know, him and Dwayne The Rock Johnson. But when it comes to like Claptrap especially, like I kind of wonder why they didn't just get, you know, I don't know, maybe like...
Well, the dude from the games.
Voice. Yeah, the dude from the games. Like, I mean, it's going to be a CGI character, presumably. It's a voice acting role. And, you know, what better way to kind of, you know, give one to the fans than maybe bring that actor back? I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that would have been a hell of a thing, because they recast him in Borderlands 3. There was that whole horrible thing with Randy Pitchford and the original dude left Gearbox. And so, like, but I mean, it is a voice acting only role. That was always the thing with why did they get Vin Diesel to be Groot when he's literally just saying, I am Groot. You could have given it to literally anybody. Just some engineer down there in the corner or something. But I don't know. I guess like with that, they'd want every part of the cast to be this like big bombastic thing. And it got me in. I mean, I'm curious what a computerized Jack Black voice sounds like coming out of Claptrap. And I guess I would hope that they do like a practical effect, like BB-8 style, have him like roaming around the set. But let us know what you think down in the comments below of the Borderlands movie so far. We can barely find the words for it, but hopefully going forward, we'll continue to cover it as more things come out. For now though, I've been Scott from WhatCulture.com.
I've been Josh from WhatCulture.com.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.